Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Training Tidbits podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge from Animal Training Academy, and as always, we're super pumped to have you here with us today, where we are going to invite another Animal Training Academy member and animal training extraordinaire onto the show with us to have a conversation about their experience and insights into best practice, positive reinforcement-based animal training. Today's guest is a good friend of mine and someone I'm very excited to have the privilege of gleaning from her the knowledge and experience she has gained over the years. We're going to talk numerous species today, from ones that share your home with you to some awe-inspiring beasties, from one of the many training hats that this person wears. Today's guest is Louise Jinman. Louise PCTA is a DALTA accredited and professional canine trainer accredited dog behavioral trainer who runs her own dog training business, Positive Dogs, in Sydney, Australia. She has served on the Association of Professional Dog Trainers, APDT Australia Committee since 2008, and has been president of the APDT Australian Committee since 2012. Louise also serves on the Pet Professional Guild PPG Australia Committee. Louise has several qualifications, including a Bachelor of Science degree and Certificate 4 in Companion Animal Services. Louise has over 26 years experience with both domestic and exotic species in both a training and husbandry / management capacity. Louise worked as a veterinary nurse, dog and cat groomer, and animal attendant in a busy and large practice in the eastern suburbs of Sydney for several years before moving to Taronga Zoo in 1994 to work on the carnivore unit, where she is the unit supervisor. Her role is varied and covers duties such as carnivore husbandry and management, animal training and enrichment, diets and nutrition, staff training and supervision, media work, conference presentations, and other forms of public speaking, research, education, and conservation work. She currently is guardian of a Shetland Shepherd dog and Siberian Husky and competes at both agility, rally-o, and obedience. Louise is author of The Art of Introducing Dogs, a guide to conducting dog-to-dog introductions. Dogs have always been Louise's passion, and she continues today to educate people about living in harmony with their dog through her writing and pet dog training courses. Without further ado, it is my great pleasure to introduce Louise Jinman to the show today. How are you, Louise?
I'm very good. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Oh, you are very welcome. And thank you from myself and from everyone listening for being on the show today. Let's dive straight in today with our first question. Could you please tell everyone out there listening and also build a little bit more upon what I've already told them about yourself and your learning odyssey? Where did you first learn about positive reinforcement animal training? And can you tell us about the first animals you ever trained using it?
All right. Well, I think the first animal, now I don't remember his name, but it was when I was very, very young. So I was under 10. I'm sure the family's got a photo of this somewhere. We were up in Queensland having a holiday. I was never allowed to have a dog when I was young. My first dog I only got when I was 32. Most people think I've had dogs my entire life, but I haven't. I was never allowed to have a dog, so I had to wait till I moved out of home. I bought a house, and that's when I got my first dog. But prior to that, my love for animals has been with me since, I don't know, the day I was born, I'm guessing. And I remember this family holiday. We were up in Queensland staying with some family friends. We went over to someone's house for a barbecue, and they had a dog. So of course, I was fascinated by the dog, and I'd seen the movie Benji, and I wanted to train a dog like they did in the movies. And so I grabbed some sausage from the barbecue and chopped it up into little pieces, and I trained the dog how to jump over a little jump, which I made out of some bricks and a broomstick. And that was probably the first animal that I actually consciously trained using positive reinforcement, even though I had no idea about all the lingo and all the science behind it. All I knew was that if I lured this dog and showed the dog what I wanted it to do and then put it on cue and then rewarded the behavior, that the dog would do it on me. So that was the very first animal that I trained. I was actually probably introduced to the science of training by Peter Clark. Peter Clark she's an extraordinary trainer. She's also trains dogs as well as a whole variety of species. I actually met her at Taronga Zoo, so I was so privileged to meet her. She's still a part of my life now and still a go-to person if I want to talk about different training information and philosophies. I approached her when I needed some help with a Siberian Husky that I had. And also actually Peter helped with a clouded leopard. That was actually the first time I met Peter. We had a clouded leopard at work that we were trying to train to go to a specific spot in her holding area so that we could enter her holding area without her wanting to climb us. She was a hand-reared cat from the States. And Peter actually came and gave us instruction on how to do that and how to use positive reinforcement, train a reward marker for that cat, train it to go to a specific spot or station so that we could enter the den safely. So that's kind of where I learned about the science of training. And with that introduction that Peter gave me all those years ago, that was back in the early thousands maybe, that I then went on and I was totally enthralled by then and I wanted to go on and do more, learn more. That actually headed me on the direction that I'm on. So that was one branch that led me down the road of actual learning about positive reinforcement training, making that conscious effort to study and learn about it. But the other was there was two ladies that I met back in 2004 when I had my little Siberian husky puppy, took him to puppy class, and there was two ladies there that, you know, even on speaking to them on the phone, they knew so much about dog training and behavior. They knew so much about my breed as well, and they impressed me so much in their application of positive reinforcement training in their puppy class that kind of spurred me on as well to want to go and learn more, actually become a qualified dog trainer.
Yeah, really cool. And what a unique species to start to learn about the science, a clouded leopard.
Yes, beautiful clouded leopard.
And Peter Clark's been mentioned a couple of times on the podcast show now, so might have to get her on the show soon.
You will indeed. Peter Clark she's an extraordinary person and trainer, and I learned so much from her. I was doing positive reinforcement training for a very long time before that, but I didn't know all the science behind it. I couldn't put words to everything that I was doing, and she was the one that alerted me to, and I'm a science person, I love science, so when she kind of alerted me to this whole science-based learning theory, and I was enthralled and I needed to know more, and so I credit that to her for driving that in me and motivating me to be a better trainer and to really know what I was talking about, not just apply stuff, which I was applying training all the time in my job and with my dog, but she made such a difference to that whole learning process.
Yeah, that layer of understanding, that blanket of understanding that over what you're doing, it kind of makes it all make sense. Is that what you're describing?
Yes, because I had worked with previous trainers. They'd been explaining what a bridge was, and I could sort of repeat back the lingo of what a bridge was, but Peter made it come to life.
And how important do you think that is? Because it's something that I feel I spend a lot of time emphasizing and driving home to people, because I see massive value in it. To someone out there listening to this podcast who's new to animal training and kind of just wants to get their hands dirty, how important do you think it is to potentially step back a little bit and spend some time teaching ourselves before we go ahead and just try to train everything?
Honestly, I think it's really important. It opened up my eyes. I mean, like I say, we were doing training. I'd been doing training at the zoo from the day I started. We started training animals to do simple behaviors, more complex behaviors. We'd been happily doing that, but something was missing. And so when you struck a problem, you didn't have the tools to be able to problem solve because you didn't have the science behind it, or that learning behind it to know how to motivate the animal or look at where the behavior was either not progressing or breaking down. Going away and doing that learning, you know, you have that aha moment where it's just like, oh my God, it all just starts to make sense, fall into place. It makes the animal's learning experience so much better because you're actually following some kind of methodology instead of just fumbling your way through. So for me, I think it's really important to learn. There's some of us that are just nerds in that regard, and we just absolutely love that whole science behind it. I think you don't have to be a professor in it, but you certainly, from my training and from how it's helped me, I think having that foundation in the learning theory, in the science behind it, in how it works, and understanding the applications of operant conditioning, of classical conditioning, I just think it will extend who you are as a trainer, and it will make learning easier for the animal because you're more focused and you can then do your problem solving. You don't kind of hit that roadblock and go, oh my God, I don't know what to do now. There's plenty of us trainers that you throw that to and go, hey, you've hit a roadblock, help me.
Yeah. And it makes those problem solving sessions more fun in my experience because
yes. It
is a layer of understanding. It's not, there's no right or wrong, naughty or bad. It's like, okay, cool. That's I can right. See what's happening.
Yep.
And I know what to do moving forward.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, I love the science. I think everyone to go that next step with your training, then do invest in your own personal learning. Because you never stop learning. I mean, I've been working with animals for a very long time and you never, ever stop learning. And that's the same with training.
I love it. Louise Jinman, Ryan Cartledge, and the rest of Animal Training Academy's podcast guests creating aha moments for everyone out there. I love hearing about everyone's stories. Personally, I find it fascinating. And I think there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are rightly so looking at your experience, your roles, and what you have achieved with absolute awe. And it's my hope that they can draw massive inspiration from your journey and hopefully use it to help them on their own. Louise, I wanted to move on now and talk about your book, The Art of Introducing Dogs. Yeah. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, sure. Look, the reason that book came around was because, you know, like I go to dog parks and I'm a very careful dog park user because it's not always the greatest place. But I do go to dog parks. I am a dog trainer. I do talk to dog people all the time. And what I kept hearing and seeing was people were bringing their two dogs to the park, or people were getting dogs. And then I was hearing about fighting in the home and how one dog's doing this to the other dog. And there's one particular case where there was a man that I used to see fairly regularly at the dog park, and he had a little cattle dog cross, and then one day he went and got a little Staffy cross puppy, and then next minute he comes back and tells me how they're fighting in the home. And then when he was bringing them to the park, the dogs were fighting over different resources, and it looked unpleasant for those dogs. And that seemed to be such a common theme. And I talked to him about, how did you pick the dog and blah blah blah, and he said, oh well, we just saw it in the paper, we went down to the rescue place, we picked up the dog, brought it home, and put the dogs in the yard together. And I thought, my god, for zoos, we so carefully plan our introductions. We can't just look in the paper and find a new tiger or find a new meerkat or clouded leopard or whatever. When we get an animal, we carefully acclimatize it to our holding facilities and exhibit. We go through a process of doing time sharing and rotations between exhibit and holding areas so the animals are familiar with each other's smells. We start doing visual contact when they feel comfortable. And then it might take weeks, months, days. Even the longest introduction I did was over 2 years to get two snow leopards together. And then we do it slowly, carefully, so that the welfare and the stress levels, everything of both animals is kept as optimum as possible. And then with our domestic dogs, I was hearing people just picking up a dog, introducing it, popping it in the backyard with their other dog, and then just leaving the dogs to their own devices to sort it out or whatever. So I thought, there's got to be a better way. And how can I apply all the knowledge that I have with my zoo animal introductions, my carnival introductions, apply it to introducing dogs? So that's kind of how the book came about. After doing my Google searches, there was maybe some two-page or three-page little articles that you could print out, but it wasn't really comprehensive enough. In fact, someone from the Siberian Husky Club actually came up to me and asked me if I would like to maybe write something about introductions of dogs for foster carers, how they can introduce new dogs coming into existing dogs. So I started writing, and then I kept writing and kept writing, because the more I started writing, the more I realized, oh my gosh, if I'm going to cover that subject, then I need to cover this subject so that people understand. And it got to be about 17 pages, and I sent it to some great training friends of mine to edit it and review it for me. And they said, Louise, you can't publish a 17-page article. It's no longer an article. It's now moving into like a booklet. And I went, oh, well, if that's where I'm going, I'm going to keep writing. So I did. I just kept writing, and that's where it turned into a book. And yeah, and so it took a little while to get that finished. I kind of started it, and then in the process of writing it, I lost my beautiful Siberian Husky boy. He was only 8. I lost him to cancer, a very aggressive, fairly rare form of cancer. And that kind of stopped the book in its tracks. And then from there, one of my friends reached out to me, a trainer friend from America. She reached out to me and said, Louise, what's going on with that book? Did you ever finish it? And kind of thought, you know what? Instead of sitting on this book like I'd done, I need to get it back out, finish it, and get it out there and get it published. So that's kind of how the book came about.
That's cool. And sorry to hear about your husky there.
Yes, my beautiful boy.
It's a very unfortunate event to happen, but glad that your friend came along and
gave me the kick that I needed.
Yeah, reinitiated your inspiration in light of the hardships that we've faced after that. Yeah. For everyone listening, I'm sure there are people that have just had their interest tweaked. Yes. Where can people get a hold of this book?
So basically, you can buy it from any online bookseller. Anyone that sells books, if you just do a search for the title or for my surname, and the book will come up. So Amazon, of course, is one of the biggest places that sell it. Dogwise also, they're an American dog book publishing company, so they have actually taken my book on, and you can get the ebook version as well as the hard copy version as well.
Very cool, and highly encourage everyone out there who's going to be introducing dogs to get their hands on a copy of that book. We're going to stay on the topic of dogs for now and then move on to some of the animals you work with in the carnivore section at Tauranga Zoo. But I was wondering, could you tell us now some more about your role as the presidente of APDT Australia and some of the neat things you've done in this role? Also, potentially just share with everyone listening, dog owners who might not know about APDT and dog owners who do, a little bit more about the association.
Yep. So the association was formed back in 1997 from the kind of parent APDT, which is in the United States. So it's the Association of Pet Dog Trainers. And so back in 1997, a group of trainers in Australia got together and they had the first inaugural meeting of the association. Association of Pet Dog Trainers. And basically it was formed to provide a forum for positive trainers to come together, positive pet dog trainers, so not necessarily the obedience instructors, although we have lots of wonderful obedience instructors as part of the association, as part of our membership, so that pet dog trainers in Australia had an association, had a body that they could belong to. And the whole purpose of the Association of Pet Dog Trainers is to educate our trainers. So that's our mission, is to educate trainers and in positive reinforcement training techniques and strengthen that bond between dog and owner. So that's how it came about. It's been around, so next year will be 20 years. I came into being on the committee back in 2008. So it's like that my whole life is interconnected. So this Siberian puppy, Makari, the one that I lost to cancer, as a little puppy, I went to puppy class with some wonderful ladies, Sandy Lack and Teresa, and both of those inspired me to go on and do better with my dog training. But it was Sandy that I went back to when I decided to go and do my Delta Certificate 4 course in dog behavioural training to be a Delta accredited trainer. And because both Sandy and Teresa had that accreditation, I'm like, I want to do what they're doing. These ladies are awesome and I love their positive training that they're doing. So because of Sandy, I went back as part of the Delta program. You have to have a dog training mentor who is also an accredited instructor. So I asked Sandy if I could go and be mentored by her. And it was Sandy that was also on the committee at that time. I believe she was treasurer of APDT at that time. And she was the one in 2008 that inspired me to join the committee. Just like anything, when you're new on a committee, I really didn't know what I was doing. I looked, listened and learned from really experienced women on the committee. And then in 2011, our president stepped down and I had been thinking that maybe another 2 or 3 years, I wouldn't mind putting my hand up for a leadership role. And it just so happened that in 2011, that position kind of presented itself. So I, as part of an election, I was elected president in early 2012 and I've been president since then, which I love. I love leadership roles, as tough as they can be. The buck stops with you, but I do love that leadership position. I love being able to hopefully positively influence people and help with the future direction. I mean, I'm passionate for APDT. I believe in what it stands for. I believe in our members. I believe in educating our members. We have members from all walks of life, from those that are not yet 100% positive reinforcement and those that made that journey to positive reinforcement. We educate everyone. We don't discriminate on who can join as a member, but we do primarily promote just positive reinforcement training methods. So really strengthening that bond between dog and owner, creating that mutual trust. And aside from just educating now our members, we get out there now and we want to work with the public. So we attend community events and hold seminars, workshops, and of course our conference is our big event of the year.
Very cool. And you just recently had your 2016 conference, didn't you?
Yes. So the conference is such a big thing. It takes up most of my year to organize each conference. So I've been helping with conference organization since 2012, since I became president. And prior to that, I was mentored by our previous conference coordinator and she was highly experienced. So she gave me really good foundation in conference organization. I'd never ever done conference organization before joining APDT. It's amazing the skills that you learn just by putting yourself out there and taking a bit of a chance. But the conference is fantastic. Every year it's our big 3-day event. This year we did 4 days. We did a series of workshops as well to whet everyone's appetite, get them ready for learning. So yeah, it's such a great experience. We have trainers from all over the world come and speak. We're really promoting our local trainers as well because we've got some incredible talent in Australia. So we promote them every year. And this year was no exception. We had several Australian speakers and they really did us proud. And next year, every year we try and do a little bit bigger and better. So next year it's in Adelaide and we've got some big names coming to that conference.
Excited about that. Now, for those listening, Australian and non-Australian, what do I need to do to join APDT and what benefits? Well, you've just described them. But
I was going to say, so to join, it's simple. You just Google APDT, Association of Pet Dog Trainers Australia, because there's APDT in lots of different countries now. So you can join it in your local country. And that's possibly more benefit if you join the USA APDT and the UK APDT. But in certainly for Australia, and New Zealand has APDT as well. So if there's New Zealand listeners, you have your own APDT that you can join. For Australian listeners, it's as simple as jumping onto the internet and looking up APDT Australia, and you can do your online application to join. It has to go through a committee meeting, so there's usually about a couple of weeks before your membership is accepted. Just that's our process in Australia with associations, that they're accepted, all new applications are accepted at the meeting. And then the benefits that you get, so you have discounted entry into all APDT events, so whether it's a seminar, a workshop, the conference, discounted entry. We produce a magazine called Click Magazine, which is a really wonderful, well put together magazine, comes out quarterly, and that's full of training information from the speakers that we're having at our conferences through to our local trainers, full of lots of dog behavior and training information. So that's one of the great benefits as well of being a member. Opportunities at all of the different events. We have a chat list so that you can put information out there and swap ideas and get help from other trainers. And we have a library where you can borrow library items free of charge, which is a fantastic bonus, as well as merchandise. So if you want some APDT branded stuff, we sell merchandise as well. We are actually about to launch a member benefit program, which is a great initiative that we've been working on for a while now, where local and wonderful businesses are going to give our APDT members discounts on their products and services. So we're pretty excited about that one.
Awesome. And I'll link to all of that in the show notes. So if you're not a member, you now know how to get involved and about all the amazing things that you have to look forward to. I want to shift gears now, Louise, if you don't mind.
Yes.
And talk about your experience as unit supervisor of carnivores at Taronga Zoo in Sydney, Australia. Can you tell us about some of the training that you're doing with the animals there?
Yeah, sure. So I've been unit supervisor now for the carnivore section for quite a few years. And part of that is the training of our animals. So with my keen interest in animal training, I've been in the very wonderful and unique position to be able to help drive that change in our unit. I remember when I very first started working with our carnivores, and it was back then in 1994, there probably wasn't a lot of positive reinforcement training. It was more, this is how you get an animal to move from here to there. It was probably more negative reinforcement based, I guess. You put pressure on the animal until they move to where you want them to, and then you release the pressure. So seeing that when I first came there, and again, you look, listen and learn whenever you first go anywhere. You can't sort of go in and start changing things. But once I started to work with the keepers that were there, we started to slowly change our methodology. And I remember one tiger that I used to work with, and she would regularly not want to go out on exhibit. She'd rather stay in the holding area with us. And we were under quite a bit of pressure to make sure our animals were on display. You know, we have people that come to the zoo that expect to see a tiger out on display. And there's this one particular female, and every day it was a challenge to get her to go out. And what we'd found was that if we use negative reinforcement, so we try and put the pressure on her to go out, she would literally cross her little front paws and just sit and look at you. And then one day I just walked away and left her and came back. She was gone. She was out on display. And I went, oh, okay. So the next day that happened again, she sat there and she was waiting to be pressured to go out. And I said, no, come on, let's just leave her. We walked away. And of course she went out. And it was from that day, once people saw the results of simply time out, walking away from her, instead of putting the usual pressure on her, suddenly she started instantly complying. And so from that day, I think it was a bit of an aha moment for some people, and certainly for me as well. And that's when we started really moving towards 100% positive reinforcement in our training. So after that, every animal that came to us, whether they were born in our carnivore unit, whether they came to us from another zoo, they were instantly worked using positive reinforcement. So if we wanted them to go out on exhibit, we would train them to go out. So we would leave a food reward in the place that we wanted them to move to. We would give them a cue to move. And then as soon as they moved, of course, then they had their immediate reward. And for instance, you know, with a dog, of course, you would deliver that reinforcer probably from your hand or by tossing it. With a carnivore, a tiger that needs to go out on their exhibit, you have to place the meat out in the actual exhibit to the place that you want the animal to go to. And so we started doing that with our tigers. We started doing that with that particular female. Her name was Celatan, beautiful tiger. And of course, lo and behold, all of our animals would go out and no longer needed any kind of pressure put on them to go out. They enjoyed going out. They wanted to go out. And then combining that with an enrichment program, because I'm extremely passionate about enrichment. And surprisingly, or not for me, not surprisingly, but surprisingly for others, suddenly animals are showing all this enthusiasm to go out into their enclosures or to move where you ask them to move, because they're getting rewarded and having enrichment out there every day. It's kind of like a double bonus for them. So that's the start of the training that I did as unit supervisor. Now we pretty much train every behavior that we can train, we will train it. We have done some incredible work with all of our big cats. So all of our big cats were trained for hand or pole injections. Pole injection is like the intermediate phase between getting that hand injection. You could use a pole with the syringe on the end. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with pole injections, but it's basically a long pole, has the syringe on the end, and you just use that exactly the same as a normal syringe. You just use the pole. It just gives you an extra reach. So if the animal's not quite to the mesh. So they're presenting the hip right to the mesh so you can do the hand injection. You simply use the pole as the hand injection instead. So that's some of the training that we did. And even things like putting frontline, we have to use frontline in Australia because of our paralysis ticks. So we've trained our animals to come up, present themselves to the mesh so that we can apply frontline to their shoulders. And these are all animals that you can't actually work in with. So we can't go in there to do these things. We have to do it remotely from outside. So it's kind of working what we call protective contact, where you're on the outside of their mesh, or well, usually these days it's mesh. The animal's on the inside of their enclosure and the animal's free to choose to walk away from you, but they actually choose to come and work with us because of our positive reinforcement training.
Very cool. And I was lucky enough to come hang out with you guys for half a day a couple of years ago now, I think. Yes. And one of my favorite experiences was witnessing the sun bears getting their teeth brushed with an electric toothbrush.
Yes, both of our sun bears. So we've had quite a few sun bears over the years and all of them have been trained. We started off training with just a normal toothbrush, as you do, and then someone said, why don't we just move to an electric toothbrush because it will clean their teeth much more efficiently in a shorter period of time. We trained that, and people love seeing the sun bears having their teeth cleaned. But what I always like to say to people, particularly our dog owners and other people that come to see the sun bears getting their teeth cleaned, if you think of the whole process of having another creature asking you to hold your mouth open and actually putting something in your mouth, it's a massive amount of trust. Those bears put so much trust in us with their teeth brushing, and so it's such a credit to the keepers. The keepers, I have to say too, that I work with on the carnivore unit, they're not necessarily trainers. They are keepers, they're employed as keepers. So the training that we have accomplished on the carnivore unit is solely due to their inspiration, their motivation, their drive to do better for the animals, to make sure that the welfare of the animals in our care is really high, best practice. And so even though they're not trainers, they have learnt all these training techniques. They've learnt how to do training. They've learnt the science of training so that they can make the lives of these animals better. So I'm so proud of the team that I work with because of all the things that we've accomplished. And that, yeah, sun bear teeth cleaning is one of those things where those bears have to have their teeth cleaned every day or every second day to help keep plaque and tartar down on their teeth. And keepers have done such a great job in training that behavior, maintaining that behavior, because we don't just have the one primary trainer that does that work. We have a team of people. So each bear might have two or three trainers that do the teeth cleaning. That's a pretty big accomplishment to keep that behavior so strong and so smooth when you have multiple people actually training each bear.
I think it might be a credit to the unit supervisor as well. Not to discredit the amazing team, obviously. Very great to hear about all the cool stuff Taronga Zoo is doing for animal welfare and with those animals, obviously, for conservation as well. And on that note, just before I do go on, you being Taronga Zoo just celebrated a pretty big milestone, am I correct?
Yes, massive milestone, 100 years. So that's 100 years on the current site. So pretty amazing, massive celebrations all year. And of course, it culminated just recently on the 7th of October. And then, of course, we had just the week later was the parade through Sydney, which was just incredible. I was a part of that. And that was pretty amazing, spectacular moment. And I'm so proud of Taronga, the work that they do, both actually at the zoo, on the site with the animals, the constant upgrading of exhibits. We're constantly looking to improve the welfare of the animals, but also Taronga support a lot of in situ work as well. And there's so many projects, I couldn't even name them off the top of my head now because they're involved with so many projects. So great, incredible organization to work for, and it makes me really proud to work there.
Yeah, cool. And I saw photos on social media of that parade and it looked pretty sensational.
It was incredible. A great magical moment, one of those magical moments that comes along once in a lifetime.
Sadly, Louise, we are now going to be heading towards the end of the podcast. We do just have a couple more questions left. I was wondering at this point if we could just ask you to share two or three more stories from your experience and highlight some significant lessons you have learned along the way.
One of the big lessons that I hope I don't keep relearning it, but never compromise on your beliefs or your dog's or animal's welfare. So I remember my little Shetland sheepdog, he's sleeping at my feet right now. When I got him, and again, this is every animal that you work with, every dog that you get, doesn't matter how experienced you are, there is a lesson to learn from every single one of them. My first Siberian, he was such a joy. He wasn't a perfect dog, but a joy to handle, so easy to handle, whether it was taking him to the vets or anywhere else, just so easy. Then I got my little Sheltie and all of a sudden, different kettle of fish. This little dog, terrified of being handled, absolutely terrified of being picked up. He's 6 years old now, but as a puppy, he could not be put onto the vet's table because he would literally have a meltdown. His anal glands would go everywhere. Never been able to have his temperature taken. If you needed to do any kind of restraint, he had a meltdown. He, again, anal glands exploding across me and the vet and the table. So he presented a lot of challenges to me, and I did a lot of work with him to get him to feel really comfortable. And now he actually, of course, asks to be picked up. He wants to be picked up. He loves me to just hold him up in my arms, and I will do that because of the challenges that I have with him as a puppy. So terrified, what I call hysterical, of when you needed to pick him up. Now he really enjoys it, and that's solely through positive reinforcement training. But I remember one night that he had to go to the vets. He had what looked like it was possibly conjunctivitis or something going on with his eye, but the vet wanted to rule out, you know, a corneal ulcer, because obviously the treatment would be different. And for that, she wanted him restrained up on the table so that she can put Fluorazine in his eye. This wasn't my normal vet. This was a locum. My normal vet wasn't around that night. And I had been working with my vet so that we didn't ever put him on the table, so that we did his very careful handling. He was never restrained. He was trained to do all the different husbandry behaviors that he would need to do for a basic exam. But this vet was quite persuasive with me and told me that she wanted him on the table, so that she had to have him restrained. And I did it because it was the authority figure, I guess, in that situation. And I let my little dog down that night. He panicked. He went backwards in his training. I could feel his heart jumping out through his chest. He was terrified. She told me he was a dominant little dog because he didn't want to be held. And of course, I knew that he was a terrified little dog. That's what was going on. And I compromised his health and welfare that night. And I promised him and myself that never, ever again would I do that. I'd never compromise my beliefs again or my animal's welfare because of maybe some instruction from someone else. With my dogs now, we go to vets and I work with other people, other professionals that have that same philosophy as me when it comes to handling dogs and handling animals. Is no force. If it was an emergency situation, you might have to do something in an emergency, but that would be a one-off thing. But when it's a general training or behavior issue, I would, if it's a simple vet exam, what I would have done in that situation, had I not been coerced into restraining my little dog, I would have got him to just do a sit, a watch, and we could have just dripped the Fluorazine into his eye using a syringe, right, with no restraint needed whatsoever. So that was one of those learning moments where you go, you know what, I'm never doing that again. I'm never going to compromise on what I knew was already not the right thing to do for my particular little dog. So I would say that to everyone, you know, do your training, believe in your training, and look for others, particularly if it's coming to your own animals, going to needing medical attention, go to those that have your same philosophy. We're moving away from the physical restraint now and the unnecessary restraint for simple procedures. It gives your dog choice. It reduces stress on you, on the vet as well as most importantly on your dog. So that's one big lesson. For me, relationship with your animal is really important. So that's another big thing. With dogs, obviously, it's easier to build a relationship with your dog for training. But I've been lucky enough to work with a whole range of zoo animals and animals that have come from situations where they've not had any prior human contact before they've come to us at our zoo. So whether it be an animal that's come from another zoo or maybe an animal that was even born at your zoo, but you didn't have access to that animal when it was young. So one example is we've had a red panda recently, and she came from a zoo in the United States, and they did what we call protective contact. So they didn't work in with her. She'd never had a human in her enclosure. And building that relationship with her, it took us 6 months, but we took it at her pace. We took it slowly. We used positive reinforcement only, and we can now, at the stage now where she approaches us, because again, we had to do this training to apply some frontline because of our paralysis ticks in the Sydney region. And this panda works with us every morning, waits for us now to come into her enclosure. She comes, walks down the log, puts herself only 1 meter off the ground, which is quite a possibly an uncomfortable position for a panda that didn't have any trust of humans. But she now, because of that relationship building that we did with her, taking things at her pace, never pushing her further than what we knew that she could go, getting her to come and approach at her pace, she's now happily approaching us. We can apply frontline, and hopefully one day in the future we might be able to start training some hand injection work with her as well. So building relationships. So it's not just food that can create that. So you don't just need to use food to create that relationship, but it's such an important part of training an animal. I mean, my little Sheltie, with the trust that he has for me, that we've formed that very strong relationship. So he now trusts me. I need to do something, a vet exam or anything, he trusts me that I'm going to keep him safe. So relationship is so, so important. One more. And look, I know this just from myself. I was in a very difficult situation probably 2 years ago when I got my second Siberian and introduced her to my little Sheltie. It wasn't the smoothest introduction. I've got a whole nother update that I can write now with my book because I've got a whole new lot of knowledge. But what I know is that, and this saying is out there, that punishment starts where knowledge ends. So anytime you find yourself getting frustrated with the introductions I was doing with my dogs, and we were getting some incompatible behavior between the two of them, I was getting situations where there would be occasional fights, or not occasional, it was happening fairly regularly. So I needed to consult people that knew much more than me. And I did. And I worked with some brilliant people to help me with my own problem that I was having. But what I noticed is that when I started to get frustrated with the behavior, it was because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go to the limit on the situation that was unfolding before me. And so do remember that if you start getting frustrated when you're training, whether it's your own animal at home, whether it's an exotic animal like the ones that I work with, if you start getting frustrated, it's solely because your knowledge is possibly being pushed to its limits and you just need to stop, take that step back and reach out to others around you. And that's where your Animal Training Academy, Ryan, is absolutely fantastic because people can join and they can reach out to others and get help with those training problems so that you don't feel that frustration, so that you don't let anything creep into your training that you don't want to.
Yeah, thanks for that endorsement there. And additionally, really like that saying, I haven't heard that before. Punishment starts where knowledge ends.
Yep.
That's great. And I think I was actually getting a bit emotional when you were talking about your little dog on the vet table there.
Yes. Yep. It was, yes. One of those moments where you go, oh my God, that is such a wake up call to me. Because, you know, sometimes you do feel under pressure from someone that they have the authority in that particular situation, but you know in your heart that what you're doing is not right. And so be that voice, be that champion for your animal, regardless of whether it's a zoo animal, whatever animal it is, be the champion for your animal and be the one that says, this is not right. This is how we're going to do it.
And as Louise said, there's a great community of positive reinforcement animal trainers from around the world of all different species of animals within Animal Training Academy, and the forums on the website is the place to connect with like-minded people with amazing knowledge and inspiration. Such great lessons. Thanks for that, Louise. That question is my favorite one I ask podcast guests. So thank you so much for sharing. That does now bring us to the finale of what has been such a fun episode to create. For this last question, Louise, I was wondering if you could take us into the future and share with everyone listening what you would like to see happen in the animal training world in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, it might be obvious, but I would love to see 100%, imagine 100% shift to positive reinforcement training. That would be the ideal, to see everyone, and not just the shift, but for people to just to see the benefits, to see how wonderful it is, to see how it just makes your animal so much control and choice to them and make that learning experience so much more fun, and to see the bond that it creates between the animal and the person, again, regardless of whether it's your own animal or an exotic animal that you're training. So I'd love to see that 100% shift to positive reinforcement training. For me, as being a pet dog trainer as well, I would love to see regulation in the dog training industry. So it would be my dream that all dog trainers were accredited, had some form of accreditation where they actually do their industry training, so do their certificate training, but then actually do an additional training where they get an accreditation. So knowledge-based accreditation, so that you know as a dog owner that when you go to a trainer, that person does actually have the skills, the training, the recognition from the industry. I would love to see greater education for trainers. So it's one thing, obviously, to go out and do your certificate course, but keeping upskilled, and that's the wonderful thing about APDT conferences, is that every year there's a place that you can go to where you can go to a 3 or 4 day conference with a couple of hundred other trainers and owners and people from all parts of the dog industry and network with them and talk to them, but upskill yourself. So important that you continue to build constantly, because there's new things. We're learning new things all the time. There's new research that's coming out constantly about dog behavior, dog cognition, the animal cognition behavior, to keep upskilling yourself, to keep at the forefront of what is happening, new developments, so that you can be the best possible trainer and even owner. If you don't aspire to be a trainer, be the best possible animal guardian that you can be. And I would love more owners to get involved with training. That would be my ideal. I see a lot of people who only reach out to a trainer once there's a fairly serious problem happening with their animal. So I'd love it to be like, just like children have to go to school, I'd love to see as a dog trainer more people. I wish it was compulsory that everyone had to go to puppy class if you get a puppy, just to get that initial information, education, and help you to live in harmony with your dog. Because it's not impossible to do, but there's so many people that have a dog and really have no idea what their dog is even trying to convey to them. Learning about dog behavior, dog body language, and dog training. I would love for everyone, obviously, to have that as part of their life. That's what I would love to see in the animal training world, is just that greater reach, getting to the owners, inspiring everyone to use positive reinforcement training and using it with each other as well. How nice would that be if we all used it with each other and not just on our animals? That's the ideal world.
That's a common answer that people give to this question, is let's start using it with each other.
Yes. Yep. It would be so great, wouldn't it, though, if we all, everyone, if you just use positive reinforcement with each other, such a great place to start, but at least use it with your animals.
Yeah, and definitely creating this podcast episode has just taken us another step towards that end goal.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. You're reaching lots of people, so we're all thankful for that.
And well grateful to you, Louise. Sadly, as mentioned, this does bring us to the end of the podcast. As I was talking to you about before we pushed record, we've hardly even talked about agility stuff today. So we're going to have to get you back on the podcast in the future to talk more about your dogs and some of the great agility stuff you're up to as well.
Excellent. I'd love to.
Fantastic. Hey, for everyone listening, and especially those with doggy questions in the Sydney area, can you tell people out there how they can find you online and how they can get in contact with you, Louise?
Yes, so you can contact me. My business name is Positive Dogs. I have a Facebook page, Positive Dogs, Positive Solutions, so you can find me on Facebook, or you can simply send me an email to positive_dogs@tpg.com.au.
Fantastic. And you're on Facebook as well, did you say?
Yes, on Facebook as well.
Perfect. Hey, from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, Louise, a massive, massive Animal Training Academy, thank you for coming on the show today. It has been sensational to have you here and learn from you. Gracias, señorita.
My absolute pleasure. It's been wonderful. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Hey, for everyone listening, I hope that you enjoyed that as much as we enjoyed making it. So many great lessons and stories from today's guest. I just know this episode is going to be changing people's and, very importantly, animals' lives everywhere. Hey, if you guys haven't already done so, then you can check out all the other Animal Training Academy podcast episodes on the website. That's www.animaltrainingacademy.com, or you can listen to them on iTunes if that's easier for you. And if you haven't been to the website already, then go check it out. Before we do wrap up today, I want to just spend a minute to talk about you. What behaviors are you training? What are your training challenges? Do you have a particular animal or training situation you are having trouble with? I want to know, because I believe Animal Training Academy has the solution for you. If there isn't already a lesson that's going to help you move in the right direction, then I'm going to create one. If there isn't already a podcast that gives you information that helps you find an answer, I'm going to record one. And to build upon this promise, I've created an option on the website where you and I can personally tailor a plan to make sure that you get the results you want with your animals. This is something we've been doing with great success already with a lot of other Animal Training Academy members, and it's a free 15 to 20 minute video call consultation where we connect and talk about your animals, your goals, and your challenges, and we make that plan moving forward. I'll put a link to a form in the podcast write-up for this episode where you can request that free video call consultation with me, and together we will uniquely tailor that plan for you. We'll leave it there for today though. If you have questions about absolutely anything you heard on the episode today, then leave a comment on the podcast write-up and we'll ensure that we get that answered for you. For now, they say over and out. Thanks for listening, and you'll hear from us again soon.